You are listening to a sermon by Joe White, recorded on Sunday, August 28, 2011, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, good morning. I am Jo. Yes, that's my name. And the title of my sermon today is A Lover's Seeking. And for those of you who are perhaps new to this church fellowship, this church has been doing a wonderful series on women's stories in the Bible. And so today I'm going to be looking at the story of two women in particular, Mary Magdalene, and also the woman lover in the book of Song of Songs. I wonder, have you ever lost the one your heart loves? Or have you ever lost a dearly beloved friend? Or have you found your great love? Or have you ever been found by someone who loves you? These two women that I mentioned before, Mary Magdalene and the woman in the book of Song of Songs, are two women who have both loved and lost and are seeking the one that their hearts do love. Primarily today, I'm hoping that we will focus on Mary Magdalene. She was a woman friend of Jesus, whom little is known about, but much has been supposed. And alongside Mary's story, we want to look at this poem, a particular section of this long poem by the woman lover in the Song of Songs. You may wonder what these two women have in common, and perhaps what we have in common with them. Although it's not in my notes, I want to bring your attention to the fact that we live in a very beautiful city here in Vancouver. I'm very sure that you noticed it this morning. And some of you may have had the pleasure of walking here and perhaps noticing some of the gardens. This is very much a garden city. And both of these texts came to my attention when I was looking into what does the Bible have to say about gardens. I was writing about a biblical theology of gardens, and that's when I discovered the similarity in these two stories. So I want you to bear that in mind, this context of the beauty of a garden. And I'll say a little bit more later about what gardens mean. But first of all, let me give you a little bit of background on Mary Magdalene. I don't know what you know about her, but many rumours have swirled about her. But what I can tell you from the biblical text is that she was deeply involved in Jesus' life during his time of ministry in Galilee and what is now known as Passion Week. In the New Testament, Mary Magdalene's name appears in relation to four major or primary situations in which she has something to do with Jesus. Firstly, she's described as a follower of Jesus. Secondly, she's mentioned as watching the crucifixion of Jesus. Thirdly, she's named as observing the burial of Jesus. And fourthly, she's named as encountering Jesus in the resurrection garden. So let me first of all go through these four points in detail. Firstly, this description of her as a follower of Jesus appears in the book of Luke in chapter 8, verses 1 to 3. The main points we can draw from this passage is she is named Mary, but she's called Magdalene. This is her nickname, you might say. Magdalene is drawn from the noun Magdala, which in Greek means watchtower. This is not insignificant, as we shall discover later, so keep it in mind. Mary's nickname is Magdala, which means watchtower. And in verse 2 of Luke chapter 8, it says that seven demons had come out of her. She was a woman who had been delivered and healed by Jesus. I'm not going to expound on what it means that she had seven demons in her, but you can understand, whatever it was not a good thing. And she wouldn't have been very pleasant company to be around. But after this time, she found herself in the company of Jesus' friends. So here's a woman who had had a life that was described as, her person was full of seven demons. And in the scripture, the number seven has something to do with the number of perfection. So in the very least, we can say she had a full number, you know. This was not a very pleasant woman to be around. However, they came out of her, and she knew herself to be delivered of them and healed by Jesus. And so she joined in with the other followers of Jesus, travelling about from town to town with Jesus as he proclaimed the good news of the kingdom of God. And she knew this good news personally. It had been profoundly life-transforming for her. And so this travelling community included the 12 disciples, as well as a number of other women who had also been cured of evil spirits and diseases. And in addition to just following Jesus, she was actually helping support Jesus and her ministry out of her own means. So this woman was actually helping to pay for this whole travelling party. But then after that, Mary Magdalene disappears from the biblical text. She moves into textual obscurity, only to reappear along with some other woman at a crucial moment in history, at the foot of the cross where Jesus was crucified. She is specifically named in three out of the four Gospels as being present at the cross, and her presence is implied within the text of the fourth Gospel. She is consistently described as watching at a distance. Her presence at the time of his burial is also noted in three out of the four Gospels, where all of the authors note her watchful stance. Matthew notes that it is her sitting, watching, when Joseph rolled the stone in front of the tomb. And Mark notes that she saw where his body was laid. And Luke says that she saw the tomb and how his body was laid in it. Clearly, she was a very observant person, true to her name, a watchtower. And in the recounting of the scene in the Resurrection Garden, all four Gospels name Magdalene as not only present, but playing a pivotal role, being the very first person to bear witness to the resurrection of Jesus. Interestingly enough, each Gospel specifically puts her name at the start of each list of those who were present at the resurrection story. Now hold on a minute. Think back to whom this woman had been known by, as by her family and friends before her transformation. This was about the worst person you would have wanted to be around, the woman who had had seven demons. And yet here she was, being honoured. She had been taken from the lowest of low places to the pinnacle of history. What a profound thing that the gospel has the power to turn our lives completely upside down. A complete reordering of our social structures and agendas. Our local communities don't have the last word on this. Yeah? It's good news. Okay, where am I? That wasn't in my notes. But that is true. I'm really excited by the fact that, you know, Jesus has the power to turn our lives completely upside down into something beautiful, by the way, into something very, very beautiful. So, it is to John's recounting of the story in particular that we're going to pay attention to today. I just want to note that in addition to where she is named in the biblical text, other mythology has built up around her name, particularly in the Western Church, as we call it. And so in some of these myths, according to her sainthood, she was supposed to be the sinful woman who anointed Jesus with her oil and tears, or possibly the adulteress whom Jesus let go free. But these texts let these women be anonymous, and so perhaps so should we. Others have even imagined that Mary might have been the lover of Jesus in a physical sense, but again, there is nothing in the text to suggest this. By comparison, in the tradition of the Eastern Church, a number of the Church Fathers considered Mary Magdalene a disciple, an apostle, and some of them even go as far as to say an apostle of the apostles. And this is the view that has now been more widely adopted by the Western Church. But before we get any further into Mary Magdalene's story, Let us firstly turn our attention to the book of Song of Songs, and in particular to the part in the narrative where the woman lover describes her longing for her lost love. So if you take your bulletin, is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
Your bulletin. And today we have on the second page, at the bottom of the second page, the reading from the Song of Songs. Now before we read this, I'd like just to give you a bit of background for those of you who are not familiar with the Song of Songs. This is a book of poetry found in the Old Testament. It's a book of poetry about a man and a woman extolling their longing desire for one another and letting their friends know all about it. Over the years, it has endured various ways of interpretation, as a factual account of King Solomon and one of his many woman lovers, an allegory and metaphor for the love relationship between God and Israel, Christ and the church, and Christ and a believer, etc. Today I want us to pay attention in the parallels of this text in the Song of Songs chapter 3 and in John chapter 20, the stories of two women seeking the great but lost loves. In the Song of Songs, up in the text up till now, we have had a long rendition of the virtues of each of the lovers' great love and appreciation of each other, in particular focusing on their physical attractiveness and their mutual desire for intimacy. It is erotic poetry at its very best. But maybe to your great disappointment, or maybe to your great relief, we're going to skip all of those details this morning and go to chapter 3, where the woman lover is describing her experience of great yearning, having lost this great love, and her pursuit of him until she finds him. One commentator has said that this is a reoccurring theme throughout the book of Song of Songs. Absence and longing, leading to search and discovery, which results in intimacy and joy. So let's read this text in Song of Songs chapter 3. All night long on my bed, I looked for the one my heart loves. I looked for him but did not find him. I will get up now and go about the city, through the streets and the squares. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him but did not find him. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. Have you seen the one my heart loves? Scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. I held him and would not let him go till I had brought him to my mother's house, to the room of the one who conceived me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. We're going to go carefully through this text again, paying attention as we go, asking questions of the text and noticing the details. So the first question is, where does the seeking start? All night long, while everyone else is sleeping, she is seeking him. Second question, what action does she take? Note the repetition in verses 1 and 2. I looked for the one my heart loves. I looked for him but did not find him. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him, but did not find him. This woman is clearly a seeker, an ardent seeker, even going about the streets in search of him. Who is she searching for? The one my heart loves. And a fourth question, as she starts her search, is she successful? Does she find him? No. Instead, who finds her? In verse 3, the watchmen found her as they made their rounds of the city. So what question does she put to these watchmen? Have you seen the one my heart loves? And what happens next? In verse 4, scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. So what does she do? What is her immediate response? I held him and would not let him go. And where does she want to take him? To her mother's house, to the room of the one who conceived her. She wants to bring him to a place of intimacy. Now, I don't know about you, but the idea of taking one's lover back to your mother's bedroom is not exactly the most romantic thought for most of us reading this today. But apparently at that time, entry into the bride's house was commonly the first formal act of marriage, after which came the union of the couple. And who does the woman lover address at the end of this poem? Her friends. She says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, my friends who are also seeking love." And what is her advice to them? "I charge you by the gazelles and the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires." It seems that this last piece of advice about waiting for love is so important that she tells her friends this three times in the Book of Song of Songs. It's also in chapter 2 and chapter 8. Doing this research for writing this, preparing the sermon, Rosie helped me use her computer, and there's some very fancy piece of software on there that artistically displays the key words in the text. And it makes the key, the more frequent the use, the larger and bolder this word pops up on the screen. So if you can imagine, there's a clutter of words, but the more emphasis in the text on the word, the larger this word appears on the screen. And interestingly, and I couldn't understand a word of it, was all in Hebrew script. And although I have studied Hebrew, that was 10 years ago and I've forgotten it. So I simply pointed to it and I said to Rosie, What's that word there? What's this word that has such a large presence in the text? And interestingly enough, and to my great delight, it's the word pronounced ear, which translates as watcher, waking, watchful, waking one, angel. And that's very interesting in light of where we go with Mary Magdalene. So let these thoughts just mull in the back of your mind, and now let's turn to the New Testament and look at this other woman, Mary Magdalene. And remembering what her name means, watchtower. So a little bit of background again on the book of John. John was written as a testimony or a declaration of the author of what he thought was really good news. But at this point in the text, we're at the end of this particular letter in chapter 20. This good news was starting to look like very bad news. The good guy, the one that everyone had been, well, many had been now pinning their hopes on, Jesus, was dead. Dead and buried. And it's at this point that we enter the story. The person who enters the stage is Mary Magdalene. This woman, follower of Jesus, who had been delivered of 7 demons and had watched a man she had loved deeply die an unexpected and cruel death in which she was rendered powerless to help him. She is grief-stricken at this point in the story and probably exhausted and traumatized given what she had seen at the foot of the cross. And not only that, she had also seen her dearly beloved's body be buried behind a very heavy stone. Now remember, the author of this text, John, is familiar with the Old Testament scriptures. In fact, they weren't Old Testament to him at all. They were the Testament. There was no New Testament at this point. And a very memorable text within that canon of writing was the Song of Songs, and it was presumably a very familiar and memorable text to many of the potential readers of this account that John's about to write. So now let's go through the book, through the text of John in your bulletin, paying careful attention again, noticing the similarities with the Song of Songs text. We will ask John's text the same set of questions that we asked the text in Song of Songs. But firstly, press pause and think about the context. This scene takes place in a garden. In chapter 19, just before this, it describes the place where Jesus is buried. It says, "At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb." It's very significant that it talks about it being in a garden, because gardens in the scripture are a motif for meeting and intimacy. for meeting and intimacy. So now let's start asking our questions. When does the bereaved lover start her seeking? So in verse 1, early on the first day of the week while it was still dark. Again, as we saw in the Song of Songs, when everyone else is sleeping, she is seeking him. What action does she take? Mary Magdalene went to the tomb. She's obviously had to leave her house and go about the streets to get there. Who is she seeking for? She's seeking for Jesus, the one her heart loves, the man she has spent the last few years caring for. And as she starts her search, is she successful? Does she find him? No, she doesn't. She says that to the other two disciples, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him. Now we're going to skip verses 3-9 about the other two disciples, because they've gone home. But Mary stays on, standing outside the tomb crying. And she is still seeking the one her heart loves. So she looks again. In verse 11b, as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb. And instead of finding the one her heart seeks, who found her? The watchman, two angels in white, seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. Now something very interesting happens in the text here when we compare it to Song of Songs. At this point, John flips the search statements. He reverses them so that the movement and initiative is not coming from the seeker, but rather from the one who is being sought. So up to now, it has been Mary looking. But now it is the one who has been supposedly lost who is seeking. So let's pay attention to that. Rather than Mary asking the question, have you seen the one my heart loves? She is asked the question. So the angels ask her, woman, why are you crying? She says, they've taken my Lord away and I don't know where they've put him. What happens next? Remember what it says in Song of Songs. Scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. Well, look what happens here. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. Hold on a minute. She did not realize it was Jesus? That's unbelievable given how much she's searching for the man. It's another reversal. She does not recognize the one she loves and is seeking. What happens next? It's another reversal. He, Jesus, the sought-out one, asks her, the seeker, the questions. Woman, he says, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for? What is her response? Thinking that he was the gardener. An aside here, we're back to this word to do with gardening again. It's very important because, yes, this is a great theological truth. He is the gardener. He is the second Adam, the resurrected Adam in the resurrection garden. But for Mary, in this instance, it is a case of mistaken identity. Thinking that he was the gardener, she said, sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him. I will go and seek him out, she is saying. Jesus said to her, Mary. The sought out one finds and names the seeking one. The intimacy of a name. Knowing that you are recognized and known. Mary, Jesus said to her. What is her response? She turned to him and cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, teacher, my dearest master. Crucially, she turns and she gives a reply in kind. She also names him. There is a profound knowing and being known in this moment. The beloveds have met. And again in the text, another reversal. Unlike in the text in Song of Songs where it says, I held him and would not let him go. John flips it over and has Jesus say to Mary, do not hold on to me. Don't cling to me. Why should she not hold on to him? And another flip in the text, compared to Song of Songs and the invitation to be taken to the mother's house, Jesus says to her, for I have not returned to the Father, the intimacy, the place of where I have come from. And in contrast to addressing the daughters of Jerusalem, whom does Jesus instruct Mary to address? Go instead to my brothers and tell them. And what is she to tell them? These are friends who are also seeking their Lord and great love. I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. Christ, her love, now desires that love be awakened. It is now time for love to be awakened. The time has come for love to be awakened. And he commends her to go and tell others about his resurrection. So what does she do? She does exactly that. She goes to the disciples with the news. I have seen the Lord. The watchtower says, I have seen the Lord. I have found the one I was seeking. And very importantly, actually, he has found her. In her seeking, in her watchfulness, not only did she find the one that her heart was seeking, but she was also the first recipient of this new vision. She was the very first to see. How profound is that? Two women seeking. Two women desirous of their great loves. How about you? Are you a watchtower? A wakeful one? A watcher? Who is your heart seeking? Who is the one your heart loves? Or rather, who is seeking you? I want to close with what Rosie actually opened the service with, her call to worship. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am.